Unfinished Business of Edie Brown, written by Freya North and read by Amanda Rabbington. Edie Brown has a hole in her cheek. I was not yet 7 years old when I experienced love and hate for the first time, and both in a single day. There would be two occasions in my life when Patrick Semple would touch my face uninvited. This was the first time, and I was six. I was fairly sure I did not have a hole in my face, but Patrick sought to prove otherwise. Into my cheek, midway from my mouth to my ear, between the upper and lower rows of my teeth, he shoved his grubby, nail-bitten finger. We were in the school playground, and Patrick, still poking at my face, regarded our circling classmates triumphant. Everyone was crowding around and looking at me as they might a reptile in the zoo. Though I wanted to glower at him, instead I found I could only smile blithely at the lot of them. "It's not a hole," said Josh, and he pulled Patrick's hand off my face and pushed him away from me. There would be many times in my life when Josh Albert would come to my side. This was the first. "It only happens when she smiles," Josh told everyone. "Look." He gave my shoulder a small shake and spoke to me, earnest and softly. "Stop smiling, Edie," he said. Josh was a quiet boy and kind. He was reasonably good at everything, and he performed all these everythings in a mild and unassuming way, which was why he had no enemies. So when he told me to stop smiling, it felt safe to do so. Everyone gathered even closer. "See," said Josh. "No hole." No one was looking at Patrick anymore. Everyone seemed entranced by the magic powers of my face. "Anyway, it's stupid to have a hole when you smile," said Patrick, now on the edge of the throng and veering off the radar of my classmates. "It's disgusting." "No, it isn't," I said. "It's a dimple." "A dimple." Josh verified the word, which was then passed around my classmates in an appreciative murmur. "Anyway," said Patrick, now smarting, "your parents are dead." They hadn't been when I'd left them at home for the short walk to school that morning. Suddenly, a terrible scorch of panic wiped the smile off my world and I started to cry. I scoured the playground, terrified that our headmaster, Mr. Swift, would come for me like he had for Emma when her mum was rushed to hospital to have her baby brother. But that was different. That was about life. This was about death. "No, they're not," I choked through tears. "My mum and dad aren't dead at all." "Well, they're either dead or they're Draculas," Patrick said, revelling in the swivel of attention back to him. He sighed as if he was finding everything to do with me very tedious. "Edie Brown lives by the graveyard," he told everyone, rolling his eyes, as if I really wasn't worth talking about, "and her parents only come out at night." This was 100% true, and I really loathed that boy just then. Edie, 7 a.m, 15th of June, 1999, home. "We're not going into work today. We have a day off. Not the regular type of day off when you don't set an alarm. I had to set ours for half an hour earlier than usual and it's just sounded. One snooze cycle allowed. I'm trying to shut my eyes against the day, but I'm wide awake. My husband sleeps on and I nudge him, huff at him, tug the corner of his pillow to disrupt his snoring. He can sleep through anything, including, it seems, our marriage. We went to sleep cross with each other last night, but just now I can't remember why and I can't remember who started it. It's hard to pinpoint these days. I'm thinking, but I can't recall. Recently, there have been many nights when we've broken the rule of not going to sleep on an argument. To be pedantic, actually, we've only bent the rule because it's never really an argument. Arguments, by definition, are about something. They have opposing sides and the potential for resolution. We just snipe and niggle over a whole lot of nothings and it's not nice, yet we can't seem to stop. Ours is not so much a vicious circle, but more of a grating cycle. What was it that set us off yesterday, which made us take to the opposite outer edges of our bed without so much as a somber night being said? A tear inches a lonely path down the side of my face, and I don't know who it's for. Let him snore, Edie.